So the rule here at Hemingway's is if you read an unfinished poem, it doesn't count against your time. You see how they work this. All right, this is another one of those, Tim got pissed off, so he's turning it into writing. It doesn't have a title yet, it just has three stanzas. The job is going to be keeping it under 50 stanzas. I was reading Caesar's commentaries on the Gallic War, which has always, for centuries, for millennia, been Caesar's commentaries on the Gallic War. But now it's suddenly, stupidly, the conquest of Gaul. So I'm thinking the next addiction of Shakespeare might be five-act entertainments for the globe. And the Gideons will be putting "A People Ran Out of Eden" in every hotel room drawer. So, a round of applause for Joan and Jimmy, the makers of the feast. Whom I deeply thank. And I also want to thank the crew here, the audience at Hemingway's. I owe them a bit. In fact, I owe them the nomination I have for Riesling right now, along with 63 other people in my category. Because about 4 years ago, I wrote a poem inventing a character whose voice is so despicable, I shelved the poem. Then I thought 2 years ago, I'll bring it out, I'll read it at Hemingway's, then I'll judge whether I should ever let this see print. You liked it, or at least the guilty among you liked it. I put it in the mail, sold it to the first place I sent it to, and it's now a nominee. It is entitled Dark Matter, and I apologize in advance. My great uncle makes even cosmology offensive. He takes the dark matter as a euphemism, calls it nigra matter, skulking and shuffling around where it can't be found when needed, undermining the rules of a well-ordered universe. He relates it to the substantia nigra nestled in his brain, interfering with his mood and what he wants to do. Secretly, he is appalled that miscegenation over the ages has let the substantia nigra into all of us, hopes that careful breeding will eventually weed it out. Just as he is appalled at the state of the cosmos, which was doing fine until those Jews and Poles, Kepler, Copernicus, Einstein, got hold of it, knows that it's just one more damn thing his kind will have to straighten out, sees that eons will be needed, discipline, right thinking, adherence to rules, until at long last the clarity and precision of the crystalline spheres is restored. We have not even approached the stars, but already his hatred is among them. This one's very short, and it explains partly why I'm standing here. Concise credo. Words have power. Even these words. Even these. And I would love to explain this poem, but I don't know. It's another character poem. It's entitled Follies. In the gardens of her memory, she has erected ruins. Beyond the ancient catalpa, a broken tower signifies a grand affair that was, in life, only a smile one afternoon, and perhaps a wink. Turning at the fountain, crossing the brook, behold the slope to the right, topped by the ashes and eternal flame of the portico of the unknown lover, a cenotaph. Over here are three grottos in memory of men she spurned without a word. But the inscriptions assure us of their long, secret devotion. The intended effect is studied desolation, a voluptuous, even triumphant pathos. Okay, this one started as two events in my neighborhood, but I've blown it all out of proportion. Armageddon. It's not actually humorous, but yeah. Is it when the trees are slaughtered? Is it when children cower under the kitchen stairs? Or is it when one says to the other, just drive over him? Or is it not until the same phrase is shouted? Or is it not until the car moves, the one finally rises, excuse me. Or is it not until the car moves, that one finally rises from the porch chair, understanding that the enemy has come? The barbarians are at the gate, and it is time to go inside, walk to the telephone, and finally raise the alarm. This is the last new one I'll be reading. Many of my short stories and poems derive from questions my wife has asked me at the dinner table, which she expects me to find the answers for immediately, without taking another bite. This one is entitled The Alcoholic Beverages of India. She hasn't heard this one yet. The name Arak tells nothing of how the stuff tastes. Just as the word whiskey gives no idea, smell of burning crofts, of the range of it, nor really does the formula, centuries of pain, for Arak. Words have only meanings that one already knows, or thinks one knows. And mystery, Sura, Pali, Penda, Andhra Pradesh Kalu, from what we suspect. Language needeth one more power, needeth to truly conjure the thing it names, the very thing, for then it can tell finally, what you did to him, and how it was all my fault. The last two, I find myself going into the Ten Commandments mode. this one is derived from my wisely led life, entitled Eight Iniquities. You ask what the great sins are, a good question, and certainly visiting Boston, yet not at least walking by the Constitution, would qualify. not eating clam chowder when in Maine. Manhattan clam chowder is a sin in itself. And another is like unto it, tomato aspic. Not buying a ticket when the lottery exceeds $70 million is impious, though not a sin. Beginning any day without a beignet is a common, almost unavoidable dereliction, remitted by sighing regretfully in the direction of Jackson Square. Twice daily, for which a mirab is suggested. To think that one can only love when one can explain is error. Likewise, not standing once in the sacred precinct of the Pythian Apollo. Likewise, avoiding Ise or Kamakura or Anglesey. To fail in alms to one's local library is abomination. To not see Istanbul almost as great. To throw away a loved teddy bear, greatest of all. And finally, inspired by a poetry exchange related event, this is my July poem published a few years ago, Commandments for July. And yes, based on true events. It's July, but they've rounded up the cheerleaders and put them in Santa's helper outfits. White hooded catsuits, lacy, transparent, the openings lined with alabaster fur. They are all blonde. They are representing headache medicine. I live in a culture where young, blonde, slender, pretty is a resume, a job description. Thou shalt not deplore it. Thou probably ought not notice it. There are competitions, but I suspect thou shalt not wonder when young blonde slender will be an Olympic sport. Thou shalt not suggest that Christie's handles the auction when they go private. Thou shalt drop the Calvinist bifocals, my friends insist. Young blonde slender is a virtue, they say, like charity or a wicked curveball. Only coroners really judge people by what's inside. Thank you very much.